we're doing.
You can try. You can try.
For those that don't know us, we're Bubba and the Bloom. I'm Bubba. That's Bloom. Yes, we're going to talk Bloom boards. He's doing one of the things that behind the scenes irks him the most. He's trying to format things right now. This is his baby, his Bloom boards. We're going to talk hitting roadmaps. We've been doing positional previews for the 2026 fantasy baseball season, and he's locked it in now. And we're going to run through your hitting positions to kind of give you an idea of, based on ADP, based on projections, where things lie. But Ryan, it is Friday. It is happy hour on the East Coast. How are we doing?
Yeah, congrats, East Coasters. You made it through the week. I think it's quite fitting that we're the happy hour shift at PitchCon. So I'm doing well. We're both still on Pacific time, so a little early for us. We'll hold off a little bit. I'm just glad I got the Bloom board to work, man. You know I get nervous.
Oh, when I saw it first pop up, I'm like, oh, I can already see his wheels turning. No.
Too zoomed in, man. Good. It's way too zoomed in. Got to fix it.
Yep, that's his babies. Those are his babies, many of these things. He's his big brain, the stuff and things he builds at the Patreon we have. It's really cool stuff. But like I said, we're going to cram a lot of this stuff into an hour. If you like what you see here, you can check us out Tuesday and Thursday nights. We stream live or just download the podcast at all your podcast platforms. Yeah. But Ryan, let's just get cracking at it because we start with the best position in all of baseball, the catching position. Where you know you have the big dumper led the way last year. You got King Williams resurgence in 2026. Rice baby in the third spot. When we're looking at the catching position, I know we've talked about it before, but a lot of people, and we're talking two catcher leagues, folks, just to give you an idea. Usually 15 team leagues. We're gonna bring that up, but a lot of people, you either go all in on catching, it feels like, or you kind of half punt catching. How do you approach it based on what you're looking at this year?
All right, cool. Yeah. First, before I don't know, I'm not going to answer your question. We barely listen to each other. So
it's like we do this regularly.
It's our relationship. before we even get to the catcher position, I just want to quick take a step back what we're looking at here. So these are the, I guess, patented, even though I don't have a trademark for it, like the A's, patented Bloom board, where we've got what you're looking at here is the top 30 by preseason average draft position ADP at the position. And then you've got color coded, of course, because that's the ethos of any good Bloom board, color coded projected stats by each. So what we're going to do today, and we've kind of done these position previews, one episode per position over the last, what, pretty much all of January at Bubba and the Bloom. We're kind of going to do the
January.
It was not. We're going to kind of run through each of these positions kind of rapid fire for you all and try and kind of paint a overall picture of how you might want to attack different positions at different spots in drafts, depending on where the market is taking these guys. So that's what we're looking at here. Obviously, green is good. Oregon Duck Green, as we call it on the show, is good. Rare Steak Red is bad, depending on your tastes. So it's all color-coded. You can kind of see where the position starts to kind of, where it's strong, where the cliffs are, where it starts to fall in terms of batting average, homers, and steals. So just want to give a lay of the land for folks that this is what we're looking at first.
Yeah, that was smart of you because, otherwise you just run through this and people go, what? But, and as you'll see, obviously, by position, it gets worse as the position gets deeper more often than not. But some positions stand out a lot differently. And the whole point of this roadmap is to be like, hey, this position you might want to attack early in the draft, or this position we can wait later in the draft. One of our favorite things we do in like mid to late February is we do pockets of ADPs, and that's when you really get to figure out the lay of the land. But this gives us something for, you know, heading into February. Draft season is ramping up in a big, big way. So back to my original question, Ryan, that you so gracefully
what was your question? Ignored.
You so gracefully ignored the first time is how do you approach the catching position? Because it is a very top-heavy position, but you can mix and match later on, depending on your comfort level, is the way I like to say it with catchers.
Yeah, so I'm glad I did listen to something you said earlier, that we are assuming two catcher leagues here, so that's mostly what we play. In a single catcher league, I think, especially if you're in like a 10 or 12-team league, I think you can wait basically until the end and kind of grab who you want. But in two catcher leagues, I think, in looking at the catcher position, where these cliffs are, I think there's a pretty big cliff after Yiner Diaz. And you can see that in the ADP here. Yiner Diaz is going at pick 117. The next catcher off the board is Samuel Bisaio and teammate Adley Rutschman at 163 and 164 respectively. So just know that if you want to get a top 10 catcher, and I think both of us recommend doing that because the gap between that top 10 and the rest is pretty sizable. Just know in your draft plan, you need to do so by roughly pick 100, 120. And, you know, we could debate each of these guys here. We've kind of already done that on our catcher episode, but I think that's kind of the big takeaway for two catcher leagues. Grab your first catcher by around pick 100 to 120, because after that, it gets pretty thin.
And another reason why we endorse taking at least your first catcher that early, because a lot of people like don't want to do that, is there's been a ton of research done, and it makes a lot of sense that you want to accumulate statistics. Well, how do you accumulate statistics? You take some of the best catchers, and the reason they're the best catchers is because they get to play a lot. It's all about plate appearances, and that's where these elite guys like Cal Raleigh, yep, if he's not catching, he's playing DH. He plays nearly every day. Same with William. Ben Rice is going to play first base. You go down the list, and as you go down the list, at-bats and plate appearances start to dwindle. Counting stats aren't as strong. Still very good players. Make some really solid catcher two options, but probably not a catcher one unless you just completely miss on the position or you decide you want to punt, because you can punt. It's viable. There's some players we like in that realm, but for a comfort zone type feel, we like to take an early catcher. But the joke Ryan and I make almost every preview show now is usually in the first 10 rounds of a 15 league draft, you want one or two shortstops, you want right, two starting pitchers, at least one closer. So now we're talking five positions already.
Outfield.
And then if you want at least one catch, yeah, it just adds up so quick. Something's got to give is where I'm going with this. So if it's catcher that gives, you can survive, but it has been pretty well documented in recent years, thanks to the work of like Steve O'Swervey and some other big, like Kyle Bland's big brain and others, that accumulation goes a long ways. And then one way to accumulate is starting catchers that play a ton.
Yep. Agreed. And again, I just think it's worth the, at least to get one catcher in that first 100 to 120, pencil that in. I kind of think there's a mini cliff in there between Sal Perez and Will Smith, Yiner Diaz. I really like the top eight at catcher. I think Will Smith and Yiner Diaz are in kind of their own little mini tier there before the massive drop off. But that would be one of my draft day objectives, at least one of the positions. We will try and be realistic here, yes, and not say grab two of every position by the 10th round, because that math doesn't math.
And the other thing that, you know, makes sense if you played fantasy baseball long enough, not a whole lot of steals at catcher, but if you do draft for the early ones, you have a better chance at steals, except sure, the pocket we see like in 16 through 20, which is a couple of the few that we've discussed on our show between like Kyle Teals of the world, Jensen's Dingler and JTR that we love as catcher twos, but you could almost live with it catcher one if you miss type situation. And it's because they can still give you it like a four-ish category appeal, unlike some of these other positions where a catcher, you're just not getting speed at all. And that's just something you have to expect. Again, that's another reason to make your roadmap, is knowing where you're going to get your stats, not just your positions, as you go through the draft room.
Yep.
All right, you want to go to first base, and this is a place that if you do decide to wait, there are options, but we said that last year, Ryan, and those options weren't quite what we hoped for. So it's kind of like, do we do it again or do we go early? Because it's another top-heavy position.
It's another top-heavy position, and you can see that all that green and power at the top here at first base. So it's almost a straight line down in terms of home runs. If you look at that home run column, that dark green gets a little bit more white and then turns to red as you get deeper at the position. So first base is absolutely a place to get power. The issue with doing that is you're not getting stolen bases, right, in 5x5 leagues. If you're taking an early Nick Kurtz, Pete Alonso, or Vlad, you're getting single-digit stolen bases. So you just need to be aware. I mean, there's other goodness with those guys, but you need to have a plan for steals if you're going to go early at first base. A couple pockets that I really like. Everyone makes fun of me for liking old people, for liking old old people in general, but old baseball players. I would say.
Yeah, phrasing.
Like the Freddie Freeman, Josh Naylor, Vinny P, to me, like at going between like pick 70, 90 is a pretty nice spot. If you don't want to pay up for a top first baseman, I like kind of that pocket in the draft. And the other nice thing about first base, and I'll turn it back over to you, is you can kind of pick your spots at batting average too. You've got a Yandy Diaz going at like pick 137. He's going to get you a pretty elite batting average and do so with power that won't hurt you. This isn't like a Luis Arias, who's also on this list going at pick 278, but has that dark red and homers for just 7 projected home runs. So you can pick your spots for batting average with Yandy, with Alec Burleson, Sal Stewart, or if you did want to go with Luis Arias himself, very late, you need to have, you know, some category juice elsewhere, but that's an option too. But yeah, first base pretty much is where you're going to get your power. You can pick your spots in batting average outside of Josh Naylor and maybe Bryce Harper, depending on how healthy he can stay. You're going to have to get your stolen bases elsewhere.
Yep. Another spot where the steals are limited. There's about 3 positions we'll get to that you want to hammer. And you get to play at least 5 of them, maybe 6, depends on how you build your roster. So that's where your steals will come from. But yeah, this is your powerhouse position. This is where the argument can be made, like, hey, do I go early? But again, realistically, how many players do you get to draft in the first few rounds? But if you go early, you're getting 30 to 40 home run guys, which are not found at a lot of positions outside of like the first couple of rounds. Where at first base, you can get them in the first 4 rounds in a 15-team league. So there is something to that a bit. But when you go deeper at the position, you still get a bunch of 20 home run guys, which you don't find many places, to Ryan's point.
Yes.
And you get some that don't crush you in batting average. Like, to me, yeah, it might be rare, at least getting close to rare, stake red on here, but it's still like 245, 250. Like, league average batting average is like 243 or something. Like, you know, when you're talking, you know, the 80th percentile you're looking for in leagues, I want out top by like 256 or whatever it was that you want your team to hit. So if I'm going later in a draft, I'm looking at projections, I'm like, hey, if he's hitting at least 250, I got a shot. Cause if he hits like 2 more hits the entire season, he probably checks the box in theory. And that can be a frugal thing. So this is why this is a position. If you don't want to go early, to Ryan's point, you can kind of do the dance. Like, you can go with the Michael Bush at 108, who's got a ton of power, some playing time concerns, but he's also not going to crush you elsewhere. You mentioned the Sal Stewart, who I think is just could be a lightning rod if playing time is there. Wilson Contreras is boring, but he's going to not crush you. Like, there's a lot of these kind of guys. There's always, you know, Bubba Burgers, Jake Berger, who if can stay healthy, the dude's like a 245, 250 hitter with 30 plus home run potential. It's just that if healthy, that's why he's going where he's going. So tons of situations like that. When I look at first base, it's a position that I can be flexible with, right? I don't have to force things. Where Ryan, you and I are in the same DC right now. We've both done a bunch of drafts. As the draft moves around, you almost feel with certain positions, you got to force yourself to do something to make sure you cover yourself. Where at first base, it's one of the positions that's like, you know what, if I feel like waiting, I know I have X, Y, or Z that at least won't destroy my team.
We talk about all the time on the pod is kind of working backwards. Who are you most comfortable where, in terms of either position or categories, where are you most comfortable waiting on? And I think that's a good way to look at it. You mentioned Bubba Burger, which, you know, I grew up on those beautiful frozen patties. Bubba Burger, Jake Berger at pick 280. That's 28 projected home runs with a batting average that isn't going to hurt you. We have a comment from Blue Jay Matt in the chat. Talk me out of Andrew Vaughn. His stat cast is bright red, and I want to believe. Andrew Vaughn sitting there at pick 300 with over 20 homers projected and a 248 batting average, to your point, won't hurt you. So I think it's valuable to kind of know like where you're comfortable waiting in drafts, because you can't just take every position early.
To Blue Jay Matt's question, though, I think one of the biggest reasons, two reasons, why Vaughn is going around pick 300. One, he had the monster second half, but it's been a long time since we've seen him do anything on that ilk. So that there's, do we believe it? Two, Andrew Vaughn in September pretty much turned into a platoon bat. That is a slight concern with what's going on in Milwaukee. But that's just why his ADP is there. If he plays, though, at that ADP, you're good to go. I wouldn't be too worried about it. All right.
Second base?
Second base. Let's do it. Now you want to talk about a rough position, folks. Things get really rough here. So, Ryan, when we're talking second base here, power is here but not here. It's few and far between. But this is where you can start getting speed. This is where you can get a little more batting average juice if you need it. So when you're looking at the second base position outside of the you know, first couple picks. And most of these guys go much later in your draft as well.
Yeah, I think this is – I think second base is – I don't know. It's just so, like, it's rare up top. This is something where you need to be aware that there's only those four going in the top 100. But there is a big chunk from, like, Zidane Rafaela, even all the way down to, like, the auto man, the bus driver at pick 216. You've got options, and this is where you can get that speed. I mean, look at that stolen base column. It is very much green for most of that top 15 and a few folks after that. So just, again, know this. Like, if you take – and I actually love Ketel Marte this year. You're going to have to pay up for him, but, like, the projections really like Ketel Marte. Look at that red for five stolen bases. Just know you're going to have to make up steals somewhere else at some other position or prioritize it elsewhere. So second base is I like to shop in that kind of middle range here, maybe around pick, like, I don't know, 180 to 200. Like, I like Ozzie Albies. I like Bryson Stott. I like Otto Lopez, even Brandon Lau in Pittsburgh. I could see that there. So that's probably where I'm going to shop at second base. And certainly staying away from Jackson Holliday at 144, right? That's been established.
So we're going with slander on this show. Okay, good to know for the future positions, as we discussed. But Jackson Holliday, there's a bet between Ryan and I of finishing positions versus other players. We call them beer bets on our show. And we pay him up at FPAS each and every year. I'm a big Jackson Holliday fan. I think he's very, very good. I think he's young, and he started to show massive signs of improvements towards the end of last year. I'm giving you guys the Cliff Notes version here. And I think he's going to be great this year. Now, the only big concern is a potential platoon, which I think would be silly from your number one overall pick a few years ago, but Agreed. Teams do weirder things. So that's just where that goes. But I think Jackson Holliday is great. I think he has the potential to be a 25, 20, 30. I think the power is as legit as it comes. He's got plenty of speed. So big fan of Jackson Holliday. And if he leads off, tons of runs scored. But that's not where I was going here, but Ryan poked proverbial bear.
Love to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, what?
I said I love to do that.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But for me, we kind of shop in the same pocket here. I rarely take an early second baseman. Like, I took Chisholm in the DC we're in right now, but I like the idea of second, third, and a 30-30 guy. Like, we can mix and match there. But I like the world of, like, Ozzie Albies at 180. Don't mind Stott. Love Otto Lopez, the bus driver this year. So those are some guys looking at them, but it's more importantly because decent batting averages, but a lot of 15-15 floors, it feels like, yep, with 20-20 upside. And again, looking for steals at this position. Stott's been a perennial 20 to 25 stolen base guy each and every year, even in a platoon. Lopez has stolen 20, stolen 15. He's great. If you want to fall back, you even got Luis Garcia Jr., who will platoon, but still has 15-15. So you have stuff to fall back on here. It does get murky at times, but I really, really want to get my stolen bases going here. I do most of my damage at shortstop in the outfield at steals, but this is a place that if I leave second base without steals, I'm nervous because I know I have to make them up elsewhere.
Yep, agreed. Agreed, for sure. And just real quick shout, this pocket of like Luis Garcia, Matt McClain, Gleyber Torres, Marcus Semien, 230, 245. I like that too. If you get in a bind and you have to wait, get that late second baseman, that could certainly work, especially Luis Garcia. I don't know. We've had our battles about Luis Garcia.
He's growing on you. I've noticed that this year when I text you about him and like talk off air, you're much more interested than ever before.
Yeah. Unfortunately you're rubbing off on me, but that 15-15 projection with a actually plus batting average, despite being in a platoon, I think that can work if you're late. And even Andre Jimenez.
I am rubbing off on you.
Yeah. Andre Jimenez at like 314, play the rebound card. Defense is good enough to play every day. If you do need steals late, look at that projection at 314. That's really nice. And you don't lose those proverbial steals if you don't need to.
Yeah. And I'll throw out there on the Luis Garcia front, he's a lot cheaper this year. So that's one reason why Ryan's more interested in him.
Agreed.
So I'll at least set that one up for him than in years past. Second, something to keep an eye on with Luis Garcia Jr., there is a really good chance he gets first base eligibility this year, and now you got some corner middle help, like in a deep, deep format. He becomes even more valuable because we just talked about how you don't really have a lot of speed at first or third. Now you might. And that can become a bit of a slight game changer. I'm not going to say Luis Garcia Jr. is a game changer, but he could definitely add some juice to your squad if that does take place. All right. Anything else at second base? Did you want to talk Ernie Clement? Like that's always a great one to discuss, but otherwise we
can move on. I think the last thing in the world I'd want to do is talk about Ernie Clement. So we'll move on to shortstop.
The poor Clements, if they're listening, I love your son. All right. Shortstop position. This is where the money gets spent, folks. Between this and the outfield, this is where the damage gets done because, one of our little models, and I'll let Ryan run with this, is you want at least one of probably the elites. Like and when we say elites, we're talking like top 8 to 10, give or take. We'll be flexible there. If you can get two, is one of our mottos. Like, because it's that good. Yeah. Like we're talking five category, like awesomeness, and the top eight go in the first four rounds. So that's where I'll pass it on to Ryan. But they go early, they go often, and usually because it's well-deserved.
And that's, I think, the biggest point we tried to make during our shortstop preview is two things can be true at the same time. There can be a lot of good shortstops, and it can be, quote-unquote, a deep position, but they go so fast that that doesn't mean you can wait to take one. And I think that's the biggest takeaway at shortstop. I think you need to join the party here in the top 7 or 8. I think these guys are so good. I mean, look at all that green up top. You've got the five categories for all these guys. They're available throughout the first two to three rounds, depending on your league size. And they're all pretty safe options all the way down through, I would argue, obviously from Bobby Witt all the way down to CJ Abrams. I'll stop at the Mookie Betts line, but I think your top 7 shortstops
there.
You are
growing. You're growing, Ryan. This is great to hear.
Thank you. Your top 7 shortstops there. I think that's a really nice place to get some all-around production. And again, do not think just because there are a lot of good shortstops that you can wait, because look at the right half of this board. So after Dansby Swanson at pick 144, the next shortstop off the board is 173. And again, we're leaning heavily on the projections here. You may agree with the projections, disagree, whatever. That's not really the point of this exercise. We're just trying to show where stats are available. Like the home runs and steals just completely dry up for shortstop after the top 15. So I think that's one point I really want to hammer home is do not wait on shortstop, because they go very quickly.
Yeah, they go extremely quickly. Back to your top 7, like where CJ Abrams is, it's crazy. Like we said, top 6 is basically in the top 30 picks. And CJ gets like a 20 pick break. And honestly, we haven't seen the best CJ Abrams yet. I maybe he doesn't have the elite power some of these guys have, but if he were to ever hit for a decent average, like these steals and runs that he could produce is good. Because that Nats team, like one of our kind of jokes we always make is there's always like good fantasy value on bad teams. That Nats team for like the last few years, including this year, has a lot of fantasy upside to it, at least like the top half of that lineup. So you put a CJ Abrams there, if he's getting on base a ton, like there's a lot of five category goodness there from CJ Abrams. That's one guy we've talked about as a, if you miss, like, maybe push him up to make sure you get him type to situation. Because to me, he's worth a top 40 pick just for what he can do and locking up that shortstop. Now, for like that second tier, like we joke, like if you can get two of the top 8, great. Very unlikely just based on where they go in the draft and you want outfielders and so on and so forth. But there's a really good tier of, I'll call them shortstop twos. It's like catcher twos because we say we want two of each one. But to Ryan's point is don't wait too long. Like for me, that cutoff, it's I don't want all these guys. Let me be very clear about that. But it's like kind of that Otto Lopez, Xander Bogaerts world is kind of where I want the last of it. Like if I could stop at Dansby Swanson, I'd be very happy. Like that would be the goal. But if you have to live with an Otto Lopez, a Xander, Mason Wynn is growing on you, which makes me proud. Like those are okay, but the rest of these guys can be a little sky. Like if Anthony Volpe, man, if he was healthy, I'd be so happy, but that's not the case.
Yeah. I don't know. And the other thing to think of too is a lot of your league, you know, again, we play that typical like kind of standard roto where you've got, you know, a middle infield. A lot of your league is using that middle infield spot with a shortstop too. So you just kind of have to take that earlier. The other thing, I mean, So, like, I like Jeremy Pena, the 10 shortstop off the board, like, if you miss that top seven, top eight. But, like, for me, it's a pretty soft second class. Like, Corey Seager, I don't think we've ever liked fantasy-wise at pick 107. Trevor Story, you're buying off of a just career year, at least in the back half of Trevor Story's career, especially from a health standpoint. Bo Bichette, what's he going to get you in homers and steals coming off of, again, a very good year? So, like, even the options around pick 100, I'm not a big fan of. So, like, for me, it's like that top seven or eight, maybe Jeremy Pena, and then Willie Adames or Dansby Swanson. It thins out very quickly for me.
It does. And I have a lot of Pena, Swanson as my number twos. We like Willie Adames. So it's a common theme. Like I said, if worst comes to worst, the bus driver who I prefer to play second base for me, I don't hate it by any means, but it's a five category onslaught and you want to make that happen. I hope it's like making sense as we talked about those other positions leading up to this. There's a reason this one's so dominant, and it's also a reason why it's like you got to plan your draft out. You have to build a roadmap to see what you want to get, and if you want to do it via tiers, if you want to build backwards, like Ben Tidd wrote an awesome article on our Patreon for the draft kit that shows like how to build an actual roadmap to your draft. Like it really like puts things into perspective. Like if you combine what we're talking about here and some other stuff, it really comes together and makes you put the total package together, what builds a team and what you're dealing with as you go through a draft room. That means we get to go to third base. But first, we have a question here, Ryan, if I can find it again, because it's actually, there it is. MB1000. I'm in a keeper league. Can only keep two. I'm struggling on a decision. Ellie De La Cruz, Nick Kurtz, or J-Rod? It's head-to-head points. Aaron Judge is his other keeper. He's leaning Ellie. Now, two things. We don't like Ellie in head-to-head. That's a risky proposition. At least I don't. I honestly, it's either J-Rod or Kurtz for me. I think Kurtz could just rack up points, but I'd probably go J-Rod with Judge. What about you?
I would do J-Rod as well.
Yeah. But Ellie is really good, much better roto player than head-to-head, because when he, even just look at last year, when he struggles, like you might not have made the playoffs. Based on his, what do you have, one homer in the second half, two homers, something? It was just a not great Bob.
Yeah, a couple more than we did. That's it.
Yeah, and just a reminder before we head to third base, if you are enjoying PitchCon, and I hope you are, and you want to help a great cause, raising money for ALS, go to pitcherlist.com/PitchCon to donate and help raise some money there. Their goal is $10,000. They're about $7,300 when we started the show. Let's get it to at least $75,000. Before the end of our show, get it to 8,000 by the end of the day. So let's make that happen and help out a really good cause. I do this each and every year, and we're glad to be a small, small part of it. All right, third base position, hot corner. This is ugly.
Yeah, like hot corner, hot garbage. I don't know if that's the comp here at third base. It is it's rough. You do have some decent options at the top. However, there aren't many of them. So obviously Jose Ramirez at five, like this is actually the case for taking J-Ram with a top five pick. I think J-Ram is well worth it just because the gap between him and the rest of this position is rather large, even over a Junior Caminero and Jazz Chisholm. There's a major gap between J-Ram and those two. But you can get power. You can get power early here. You can see that home run column. Basically those top nine outside of mighty Michael Garcia, who I guess we found out today is Ronald Acuna's cousin.
Yeah, never knew that. He's the cousin of the Acuna's. Wait, Luis Angel Acuna's cousin, by the way, just so you know. But
yes.
Did not know that, but makes even more sense of why we love him. And maybe there is a lot more power in that bat.
Yeah. So he's kind of, I mean, Michael Garcia is kind of the unicorn here in terms of you can get those bags with a good batting average and homers that, you know, will drag you down a little bit, certainly compared to the others. But this is generally a position where you've got that power up top if you want it. It's rough, though. Like, I struggle taking, like, a Junior Caminero just because the steals aren't there when we just looked at all the shortstops, and we'll talk about, I think, outfield next. I'd like to get so much five-category goodness with my first two picks that it's a tougher pick. For me, Jazzy might be playing at second base. This is probably my hardest position to attack. something I have done in a couple drafts. I mentioned I really like Ketel Marte at second base and how much he sets you back at in stolen bases. Taking a lot of like Caleb Durbin, who's sitting that back there like 234, who is one of those few third basemen who can get you some steals, a little bit of a unicorn there. So I don't know. This is a very tough position for me in fantasy this year. I don't really see many pockets. And even Matt Shaw's on here. This board was made for our third base episode a couple weeks ago before Shaw was booted from a regular role. So this is my toughest position to handle in 5x5.
Yeah, this is a position where I find myself attempting to be really aggressive, especially since Matt Shaw is pretty much out of the equation. The guy I used to love to fall back on, Mark Vientos, pretty much is a question mark.
Is a question.
Even Brett Beatty is a question mark. So it's like, those are guys, if we were punting, we're like, okay, cool. So I could live with a Miguel Vargas, but do you want him to be your starting third baseman? That's a question up for debate. Like, Josh Young's a guy I kind of want to believe in if you want to get crazy. But that, to the point, this is why I'm stuck up front. I've been trying to get the off-brand mascot, Mikel Garcia, as much as humanly possible. It's just tricky trying to build it out, getting my outfielders and my shortstops and all that stuff. So it does make it tough in that regard. Otherwise, like, it's pretty much J-Ram, Mikel Garcia, and I love Junior Caminero with passion, like a lot of passion. And it's doable without steals. It's just not comfortable, as Ryan said. Like, you have to have a plan, again, to combat that. Usually I can, because I don't take pitching early, unlike everybody else. So that allows me to take an extra stolen base guy. But yeah, you pretty much got to get aggressive with the Mikel or a J-Ram, or, you know, Caleb Durbin, if you're just a projections person, is a poor man's Mikel Garcia. That's who he is.
Right. Yep.
So it works in that regard. Or you go with the boring Chapmans. Do you trust Royce Lewis, Isak? Like, that's just why it's rough. There's a ton of question marks at the position, is the best way to put it. Like, unless you're going to pay up and miss out on a shortstop, an ace, or something like that, you have to take a risk at the position at some point in time.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, I mean, I look at like these third base 9 through 15. Noelvi Marte. Oh, no. Noelvi Marte.
Just a pinch.
I got to pinch it back. Oh, no. We'll pitch it back. I got this new AI webcam, and it's now going to zoom in on me. Oh, man.
This is beautiful.
All right. Now you're going to get my giant face. That's okay.
Side note, little story time with Bubba the Bloom. We did a Patreon-only episode with Rob DiPietro of the Pull Hitter Podcast. And Ryan, there you
go. Look at that.
And Ryan just got this camera, and it was stuck on his forehead, and he's literally frantically trying to figure out for about 5 or 10 minutes.
I was doing all kinds of finger gymnastics trying to get this thing to work. Rob was like, what are you doing?
Absolutely priceless.
It was Zoom Field.
Zoom comment Field, that is glorious.
That's pretty legendary.
Well done, Ben. But sorry, I had to interrupt that.
No, I need to learn to not talk with my hands with this webcam that uses gestures to zoom in and out. It's kind of freaky.
That's absolutely amazing.
I don't even know where I was at, honestly. Oh, no, I was talking about 9. So 9 through 15 at third base. Like the middle class at third base is just very rough. Noelvi Marte, I think, could be in the minors for a good chunk of 2026 if he doesn't hit the ground running with the bat. I think Cincinnati has other alternatives there. You look at the actual real world value for Noelvi Marte, it's not great. I like Matt Shaw. Obviously, Matt Chapman. Matt Shaw is obviously not a factor. We all know the risk with Royce Lewis.
But I'm we in. Know
you're in.
Yeah,
yeah, pick 200. It's easier, yeah. But it's risk. If that's your starting third baseman, that's risk. Addison Barger did not finish well at all. Is a platoon bat right now. Isak Paredes is maybe not even a regular if Christian Walker stays in Houston. So it's just I don't know. I hate to belabor the point, but this is my toughest position to figure out what to do. It does make me want to consider like an early Manny Machado and Austin Riley. If he stays healthy, I think is just as good as peak Austin Riley that we saw a few years ago, Mikel Garcia and Alex Bregman. I know we had a question, any concerns about Bregman hitting at Wrigley? Park factor wise, not really. I mean, he does go from a couple short left field fences to Wrigley, but to me, it's not that much of a concern. At pick 123, I think Alex Bregman's fine.
No, I actually talked about it on my Cubs preview with Sarah Sanchez, and it's interesting. If you look at the dimensions, yeah, down the line, it's the deepest in baseball, but when it comes back to the left center and on, it's pretty normal. And Bregman's profile is essentially like left center to right center. That's what most of his profile is. Like, if you do the boring like what's it look like on StatCast when you change his spray chart, he actually would have been more than fine in Wrigley. But his approach shouldn't be a massive concern. He shouldn't have a massive drop off. He actually should have had a bigger drop off in Fenway because of the size of the monster than anything else. Like, there's actually data on that, so he should be just fine.
Yeah.
And then MB1000 has a great question. He says, "How does AI respond to a middle finger?" If you guys are curious, we live stream a lot of drafts coming up, and sometimes I'm just there for comedic relief. We'll probably find out.
Pushing boundaries, Bubba. I'm half expecting Nick to pop up here with G-rated.
If Jeff Passan can do it, we can. Blue Jay Matt says, "Sorry, me again. Does Bo Bichette get a value boost because of the positional scarcity of third base?" I'd say yes, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially if there's different varying degrees of usefulness for multi-position eligibility, but being able to play at corner and middle is great. And yes, if you have Bo Bichette, you're probably getting in-season third base pretty soon. And I think Bo Bichette, I mean, if we go back to shortstop real quick, Bo Bichette was going at pick 112, which would be shortstop number 13. That is now all of a sudden third baseman number 6. Third baseman number 7. So again, that's just an example of the difference between how many shortstops there are available, but how many go early. Bo Bichette would jump from 13th, again, just by ADP, by the marketplace. Bo Bichette would jump from 13th at shortstop to 7th at third base. That's a pretty wild, wild drop.
And that's another thing. Like, if you go through all of our previews, and we try to mention some of them for people with multi-position eligibilities, it'll really enunciate how good or bad a position is based on like certain positions. They'll be so much higher, like ridiculously higher, yep, or lower type situations.
Yep.
So that kind of stuff stands out a ton as well. All right, let's get to the outfield. We got 3 slides for you all. So we got 90 outfielders for you. So this is 1 through 30, Ryan. Like, what are we? It's obviously a lot more Oregon Duck Green because the outfield ones are compared to the outfield, so they'll get more rare stake red as the slides go on.
Yes. Couple things that I like to kind of look at is just take the temperature of the marketplace and just try and figure out how many outfielders you generally want to have at certain points in the draft. And just by looking at this board right through it for our first 30 outfielders, it's pretty easy to tell, right, in a 15 team league, on average, the market has been taking their outfielder 1 by pick 80. And then their outfield 2 by pick 140. When we get to the next group here, I'd like to even be more aggressive with outfield because I think there's a major cliff at pick like 200. We'll get there on the next slide to kind of show you all why we think that. But similar to shortstop, there is a ton of talent in the outfield. However, it goes extremely quickly. 8 of the first 20 overall players, not just hitters, overall players, 8 of those first 20 are outfielders. And I mean, you can see why. Again, similar to shortstop, like, and we've both talked about, we've had a few teams where like you're drafting near the back half of the first round in these 15 teamers or even 12 teamers. There's a lot of great starts that are shortstop outfield. You can pair a Gunnar Henderson, a Francisco Lindor, Fernando Tatis with any one of these outfielders going in this range. And so like, if you can combine an early outfield with a shortstop, you have a very strong 5 category base. And those are the two positions that you can do that with your first 2 picks.
And you mentioned 8 of the top 20 the top 8 outfielders in the top 20 picks. If you factor in shortstop, 12 of the top 20 picks are either a shortstop or an outfielder. Yeah. So yeah, it really brings it into the focus. It's, 18 of the top 34, so it stretches a little more, but over half of the top 34 picks are a shortstop or an outfielder. It just shows you the importance of going again those 5 category dudes. And they have most of these have a track record as well. Most of them, I say, have a track record of being awesome. And these aren't just like your average 5 category guys either. Like, these are 30-30 guys that could approach 40-40. Now, Judge won't steal as much, but he also has 50 home run upside and hits for average.
Yeah, he does so much elsewhere. It's fine.
It's not necessary to steal, basically.
You can work.
So, yeah. It's a wild position. But so, yeah, to Ryan's point, we both like to, if possible, things change. We do adapt. We are older and, you know, we can teach a dog new tricks. We like to get one of an outfielder and a shortstop usually in the first two rounds, or two outfielders or two shortstops. But usually our first two picks are coming from these pockets if we can, like I've seen us do both. But give us those five category guys. Give us that strong, strong base because it gives you availability to move around elsewhere.
And the other reason I like to specifically go early outfielder with one of my first two picks is I'm not a huge fan, like after Jackson Churio and maybe PCA. I don't mind PCA at the price. I've been pretty vocal anti-James Wood at the price. Love the player. Love the player. Hate the price. Just at pick 34. Same with like a Wyatt Langford, Roman Anthony, Jackson Merrill, who I think only attempted one or two steals last year total. I know he was injured, but can we assume that that stolen base total comes back? I think for how strong the elite of the elite are at outfield, to me, like if I'm picking holes, and that's what we like to do a lot on the show. It's like, yeah, we know all these guys are good. You're going to have to pay up for them. Which profiles can we pick the most holes in? And I think at outfield, like, for me, from like pick 35 to pick 80, I really like Brent Rooker and Riley Green a little bit to a lesser extent. There's not many outfielders I like in that range. So, which is again, when I'm kind of laying out my kind of draft map and plan, I see that massive kind of gulf in outfield talent, in my opinion. Again, you can disagree and be high on James Wood, and that's a totally valid take. It just really kind of forces me to really want to get one of those top eight or nine outfielders in pretty much every draft I'm in.
And then it also shows like if Ryan per se doesn't like that next chunk, but maybe likes the chunk after, okay, this is where I'm going to take a third baseman, or I'm going to take a starting pitcher, or like, so again, building out your roadmap to drafting, it helps you know, I want to target this position of these stats here, so on and so forth. Another thing to think about, it's talked about enough, but not enough, I guess, is people like to talk about KDS. Now, if you do want to get a shortstop and an outfielder or two of each, you probably need to be in the back half of KDS because mentioned the top eight outfielders are in the top 20. If you talk the top four shortstops are in the top 20. If you do quick math, if you're in the front half of your KDS, you're not getting two of them. You'll get one and you'll get a monster. Like there's no denying that. Like I the DC right now, I got my first Otani share, my first pick. But my turn is, and it's still a good thing if you build. It's an ace pitcher and an ace closer. So, like, it works to what you're trying to do. But if your goal walking into a room, it's like your comfort level is, I want 2-5 category studs out the gate. You also got to factor in KDS to go that direction as well.
Yep, agreed. What do you think about, so, like, my favorite part of the draft is like there's so many like legends at like pick 100 roughly. Oh, yeah, that, you know, give
that's
or take
our, that's our world,
it's our spot, man. So like, and this was the Cody Bellinger 91 ADP is before re-signing with the Yankees, though I think a lot of us kind of assume Bellinger would re-sign, so price has only slightly gone up. But like, man, do I like Randy Arozarena at 100, Michael Harris at 99. Somehow you've come around on Michael Harris price, at the price.
The price.
You've drafted Michael Harris more often than I have, which is pretty incredible to think about. You've got Seiya Suzuki, you've got George Springer right there. Bellinger at 90. Like that's for me, that's a very nice, if you're going to wait and get that outfield two, or not even wait, get the outfield two, be aggressive and get that outfield two by pick 100. I think that's a really good spot to do so. You're not getting that elite production that you're paying for in the first three rounds, but you're getting like a poor man's version of it, and you're getting it at pick 100. And it's not like your draft plan hinges on one guy. I'm big on this as well. It's not like you can plan for a draft to take one guy. I like having three or four different alternatives. So if I go into a draft and I'm looking at roughly that pick 100, I've got four options there. I've got Harris, Randy, Springer, and Suzuki, and even Altuve, but probably playing him at second base. So I just want to point that out. That's just a, in my opinion, a really nice pocket of guys who are pretty much all projected to outperform their draft price there.
And then there's another angle. Say, so you want the top half of KDS and you are okay with pitching. Well, that pocket you mentioned could be your second outfielder coming around in like round 6-7 turn. So like that, if you can build with that section of the draft,
yep,
that works for you. Again, that's why it's good looking at this total package. It's a broken record, but that's the whole point of this process. Finishing out the top 30, you're starting to slowly see, like, it's not full five category guys. You kind of start seeing that around pick 100 that you mentioned earlier. But like Joe Adell might hit a million home runs. We know the skills are there, but the batting average and the steals, like, do we ever get that back type thing? Lou Bob's a similar boat. T. Oscar is really good, but is he going to run anymore? Like, you're getting closer to shifting the four category guys quickly. Another reason why we emphasize so importantly, make sure you get your outfielders early to at least get two of them.
Yep. And leagues we play in, you need five of them. I mean, that's not, especially in these draft and holds that we're playing, and you need like 11 of them. And so it's just, you got to have that volume.
All righty. Let's go to slide two, outfield 31 through 60, where we're starting to see a little more of a pink on the screen. I'll say it's not full rare steak red yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. I think there's a slight drop here, right, with outfielders, what is this, 31 to 45 on the left side of our screen here, starting at Andy Pajes, pick 140 down to oatmeal legend Brian Reynolds at pick 199. I like a fair enough, like enough of these guys that I'm comfortable taking one to even two and trying to get my four outfielders by pick 200. Again, I know that's hard to do because you are kind of ahead of the market pace, and that's going to cost you in positions elsewhere. But I think roughly after around pick 200, you start to get into what we call in our least favorite town, right? Platoonsville. You start to lose that playing time certainty and really start to see a cliff in projected value there at outfield. So I'm really focusing in on this 150 to 200 range. And if I can make it work, I'm trying to grab two of these guys. There's enough of them that I like. And I feel like the cliff after pick 200 is steep enough to where I think it makes sense to be aggressive here and get your four outfielders by pick 200.
Yep, no, it makes a ton of sense. It's an interesting pocket, especially when you go from like Lawrence Butler, Brenton Doyle, Dylan Cruz, like just those three alone I'll throw out there, because I think especially Butler, Doyle, they're 2020 guys. Can they rebound? Because they both had kind of down seasons last year, of course. A rebound of them, like these price tags could be amazing. 161 and 165 ADP. Dylan Cruz, rough rookie season, but he also was injured a lot. Can he hit that pedigree? Again, could be a great price. There's a lot of that. And then that next pocket down from Burleson to your boy, your oatmeal boy, Reynolds, outside of Jason Dominguez, who is the king of Platoonsville at this point. Like Hap, Profar, Reynolds, like that's just a sturdy floor, like a very sturdy floor, which especially in a 15-team league, those guys are really valuable, like really, really valuable. So I don't mind like what you're saying. I want at least one from this left side of the board, 31 through 45. But if I have two there, it makes me sleep a lot better knowing I only have to find one more in a fab league the rest of the way. Because when you look at 46 through 60, Ryan, there's a ton of question marks, tons of is it upside? Is there a massive hole there? You're entering three category guys. You're in Platoonsville, as you mentioned. There's a ton of question marks as we start getting to past the ADP, the 46th outfielder on the board.
Agreed. I think the other nice thing about this 31 through 45 group at outfield is there's still different types of profiles, right? There's like your super boring Hap, Profar, Brandon Nimmo that you talked about. You can go with the speed heavy guys like a Jacob Marcy. I love Jacob Marcy this season. I'm taking the firm over on this projected 229 batting average. Projections, by the way, I probably should have said this at the top, are the publicly available Fangraphs projections. So you can see that at the bottom of the board for this one. I've aggregated a few of them together, but I would take the firm over on Jacob Marcy's 230 batting average there. But you can get, you know, low batting average, but power speed sources, Lawrence Butler, Brenton Doyle. You can get batting average. You can get Stephen Kwan, Alec Burleson. So like there's different types of profiles that you can get depending on what you've done with your draft up to this point. There's different ways to kind of patch and balance your team, which I really like. It's not like it's the same archetype at like for example, like at first base or third base where they're all kind of the same dude. It's just different variations of skill. You can go different ways with this pocket, with this group, and balance your team out that way.
Agreed. Yeah, there's lots of ways. Like you can pick one of those as your fifth guy, with the ceilings that could take place is great. Real quick, MB1000 says Caballero is a steal since he's going to play shortstop most of the season. Steal's a loose word, but I see what you're saying at 222, because once Volpe comes back, now you're hoping an injury takes place to continue Caballero playing.
It definitely will play shortstop to start the season, and then you never know. I mean, Caballero is so...
He's eligible everywhere.
Yeah, he's so versatile. That's the word I'm looking for, versatile, that someone else on the Yankees is, you know, you don't wish injury on anybody, but someone else in the Yankees by mid-May is going to get hurt. And who's going to be the guy who plugs that hole? Probably Jose Caballero. So there's a chance Jose Caballero going to pick 222 can definitely start at shortstop and then patch together enough playing time to make that worth it. And one other thing I will add is give me Jose Caballero all day, twice on Sunday, over Chandler Simpson going 50 picks ahead. We've had the Chandler Simpson discussion many times on our podcast, but our good friend Martin Sokolsky posed the question, what are you taking more of, steals for Chandler Simpson or days in the minors? I think that's a good question.
And yes, Caballero was near the top of baseball in steals the last couple of years.
Correct.
If you're curious for the chat.
Yep.
All right, last slide, Ryan. We're talking ADP 61 through 90. This is the dark depths of the outfield. You pray you only need one of these guys in a 15-team league. In a 12-team league, you shouldn't even be here, most likely, because this is full-on platoonsville, or it's a guy off an injury, or they just might not have any play. Like, they're fourth outfielders, and you're hoping they get playing time. That's where we're at for the most part in this range. So I'll give you the floor, Ryan, because it makes me want to cook a steak looking at the rare steakness of this deal.
Pardon the headers on this one as well. I forgot to update those. This is not projected ERA, whip, and strikeouts. This is batting average, home runs, and steals, people. Just no power. Again, this is why we just said we want to have outfield kind of shored up by now, because, I mean, look at the power that is completely gone. After Trent Grisham and Giancarlo Stanton, like we like Mickey Moniak a little bit too, not a single outfielder outside of Matt Wallner is projected to hit over 20 home runs. Again, that is brutal, the lack of power. You see red everywhere, especially batting average. If you take too many of these low batting average guys this late, it can really start to drag down your team's average, so you just need to be mindful of that. You can pick your spots and find some targets here if you're in a bind, especially if you need your fifth outfielder. I get it. This is where it's at, but in general, it's tough, man. It's very tough.
Yeah, very, very tough. It's all about, I guess, painting your prettiest pictures, the way I'll say. Like, when you look at a profile, which one do you think actually has, like, do you think, I gave like the pitch for Giancarlo on a show when we previewed this, is, yeah, the projection stinks, but last year, and again, we know he's going to be on the IL at least once or twice. That's just the reality of Stan. But when he was healthy last year, dude hit over 270. He had over 20 home runs. Like, he was a menace. Even when he wasn't playing every day, the weekly preview show we did on Thursdays for Fab, it came down to, it's like, okay, he might only play 3 of 6 games this week, but that's going to be better than any fifth outfielder you have. Yep. And so you have to start painting the picture, because, like we talked about with catchers, we started the show, so this is called full circle. You want plate appearances at the top. Yes, you do, with your starting catchers. Your fifth outfielder, the way baseball is played these days, is likely in a platoon. That's just the reality of the situation. So now you have to maximize that platoon, not maximize plate appearances, maximize that platoon. Like, is 2 versus a righty or 1 versus a lefty more important? That's what you have to decide. So Stanton, to me, actually at ADP 270, has value, especially in a fab league, because you can drop him. So that's interesting. Like, you mentioned Justin Crawford. Does he take a jump? Cedric Mullins, even in platoons year after year, it's at least a 15-15 profile with upside. So on and so forth. I won't name them all. But you have to me, this is the area of the draft where you have to, like, paint a picture of what do I feel okay going with, and knowing if I'm wrong, I am dropping them quickly and moving on.
Because and that's a really good point to distinguish, like, the Fab League with kind of these draft and holds. I mean, we do a Fab preview every Thursday night, every week throughout the season, and seemingly every single Fab preview, there are a handful of outfielders that we like for that week, just based on matchups, just based on talent, just the volume of guys that are available there compared to the infield. And so, yeah, if you're in a Fab League, to your point, if some of these guys, like, shoot for the moon here, shoot for like a Justin Crawford, a Josh Lowe, get as much, you know, for like Josh Lowe, get as much healthy plate appearances as you can get. If he gets hurt, you can drop and move on. Because if it doesn't work out, we have found through our weekly shows that there's a good amount of talent in Fab at outfield compared to especially corner infield.
Couple quick questions from the chat before Nick comes and hauls us away. MB1000 says, could we witness a Jordan Walker breakout? Are we done? I know I'm done. I won't speak for you, but I think I know.
I think I'm done. I'm done.
Ryan and I are kind of that old where we say it a lot. You need to prove it to us, and some players have to prove it to us twice. He hasn't proven it to us once. So it's with him, I'm kind of out. And he's still super young, so it can be done.
Yep.
And then Joe Chris says, Victor Robles, comeback player of the year. I am nervous. Ryan's a little more optimistic than I am.
I'm somewhat biased as a Mariner fan. I think of the second half 2024 version of Victor Robles when Seattle picked him up and he hit like 300 and just ran wild. I can see that again. I think last season for Victor Robles was a total wash, fluky injury, diving into the netting at Giant Stadium, just totally derailed everything. I think Victor Robles has a job in Seattle. I think he's going to play pretty much every day, and I think while he's not going to get you the power, of course, where given the price where Victor Robles is going, and what we saw in the, again an admittedly small samples stint in the second half of 24 with Seattle, I think Seattle sees something in him and can unlock that. So I don't know about comeback player of the year, but I really like Victor Robles at the price. And again, if it doesn't work out, he's going late enough. Move on and try and find the next guy.